They're getting closer. What do we do?
Well, I'm going to have a go at Betway's 4-to-score game for a chance to win 25 grand.
What?
Relax. It's free to play every week. You simply predict the first teams to score in the top four English leagues.
The time has come.
You're right. We'd be howling mad to miss this one.
I could win 25 grand.
For the love of the game, Betway. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
If I can be serious for a minute, without being interrupted.
Excuse me!
What? What?
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
We don't just set the bar.
We are the bar.
Making their way to the ring. Talking about the world of professional wrestling. The team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga. The Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Welcome to the experience that is the High Spot Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter Brian Berga. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/High Spot Podcast, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at High Spot Podcast, and our website, highspotpodcast.com. We got James Ellsworth with us today on the show. Trendsetter, how you doing? Where can they find us?
I'm doing good, man. You can find us on the Cheap Pops Podcast Network, available on Blog Talk Radio. Leave us a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts. It only takes a few seconds, guys. You can also check us out on TuneIn, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, and SoundCloud.
And the High Spot Podcast YouTube channel is up and running. We've got exclusive interviews with such stars as Impact Wrestling's Tag Team Champions LAX, Alberto El Patron, Sienna the Savage, Bullet Club members The Villain Marty Scurll, and Adam Hangman Page, plus Ring of Honor's Jay Lethal and Josh Woods. Plus, you can catch video from the High Spot Podcast miniseries Adventures with the Trendsetter with my man here, my tag team partner, Brian Berga. So a lot of ways you can reach us here on the High Spot Podcast. And also, we've got amazing content for you guys every day. It's up and running. Something special for you guys everywhere you look. HighSpotPodcast.com, as well as our now brand new YouTube channel. Trendsetter, got a great show, man. James Ellsworth, former WWE superstar, will be here in just a little bit. But first and foremost, how you doing, pal?
Doing good, man. Burning the midnight oil, doing all the activities that you and I have to do in course of making this episode for you guys, the crew. And really excited to be talking about the events right now because wrestling doesn't stop for everybody. And you know what? There's always something to talk about, so I'm looking forward to this episode, Jeff.
Listen, a lot of stuff that people are talking about, and a couple of things that I was telling you before we even came on the show that I wanted to write down and was definitely make it a point to talk about was the whole Seth Rollins gauntlet match. And while, yes, it was a great match and what people were going nuts about it and people are saying, wow, this is what Seth Rollins is supposed to be. Oh, this could be a huge push for Seth Rollins in the future. At the end of the day, let's be honest, we knew that Seth Rollins is an amazing guy. We knew that Seth Rollins is an awesome athlete, and we knew that this is the spot he deserves to be in. Unfortunately, that WWE Raw has been the land of the giants. You've had Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and then eventually you're going to have more giants. Who knows, maybe Bobby Lashley joining Monday Night Raw eventually. So it's been tough for guys like Finn Balor and Seth Rollins to kind of find their way on top of the main event for Monday Night Raw, but at least this was a great start for what seemed to be like a push to Seth Rollins. But again, though, it gets people talking, gets fans saying, wow, this is a position that Rollins should be. But until Rollins, in my eyes, goes to SmackDown Live, I think that Seth Rollins is going to be a tease, but you're not going to go anywhere with Seth Rollins because you've got guys like Brock, like Braun Strowman, like Roman Reigns that are always going to put guys like Seth Rollins to the side.
it's clear he's going to be overshadowed by those individuals you just mentioned, Jeff. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman. It's the land of the giants, as you always like to say about Raw. And SmackDown Live is probably the show that has a very overrated or very understaffed roster. So, yeah, would he make sense on SmackDown Live? Would a guy like Finn Balor and maybe the Balor Club make sense over there? Yeah, we talked about this last week, though. But again, I think it comes in terms of booking and how you book them. But again, on Raw, you saw a perfect example of what Seth Rollins is really good at, wrestling. He can do it with anybody, and he does it. He's one of the best at doing it right now on this Raw roster. But I just think it gets overshadowed. It's a great tease, as you said, and just showcases.
Overshadowed by what?
His work gets overshadowed by the amount of people that are on this roster. And you have a guy like Roman Reigns, who's going to be the face not only of Raw but this company. You know, what he does is a little bit overshadowed because, you know, as good as he is, and the fact that he should be and has the claim to be a top guy in this business and wanting to be the Universal Champion or being a champion, it's most likely not going to happen on the Raw roster. So a lot of debate. It was great to watch. It was exciting for the first time to ever watch Raw and see some wrestling from literally an hour and a half. It was just wrestling because of that gauntlet match. So as much as we made fun of it in terms of it wasn't going to gain any momentum for whoever won it, it was going to be pretty interesting to watch it because we didn't see Kurt Angle come out. We didn't see Stephanie McMahon make an announcement. Right from the beginning, we saw wrestling all the way till an hour and a half, and it was pretty good. And I think this is one of the better flowing Raws that I've seen in a long time.
Definitely a lot of wrestling, too, so you can't complain that it was just a bunch of promo because it was a lot of wrestling, especially in the opening hour. An hour and 40-plus minutes for this Scotland match, which obviously saw Seth Rollins beat John Cena and Roman Reigns on the same night. A lot of people on social media want to claim that this is kind of the same as beating Austin and The Rock on the same night, but you know what? It wasn't for the Undisputed Championship, so the GOAT, still to me, had the most impressive victory of two superstars in one night. That is Chris Jericho defeating The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So there you go. To whoever thought that would be even comparable, you could even compare that. But Brian, we are on the verge of Elimination Chamber. And yep. I got to tell you, man, this feels to me, and by the way, we will have our predictions and previews after our interview with James Ellsworth, so stick around to that. But the one thing I feel about this Elimination Chamber, that's so predictable. It just doesn't seem like it's like, man, I got to, you know, tune in and watch this because anything could happen. Could they swerve us in the main event? I don't know because it looks like it's going to be Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. This is going to be how Roman Reigns gets his main event opportunity at Mania to take on Brock Lesnar. So I really don't see any surprises in this. Asuka and Nia Jax, come on. You know, if you think that they're going to go with Asuka undefeated past Mania, how can Nia Jax defeat Asuka? So this to me is very predictable. Your thoughts on the Elimination Chamber before we preview and predict it after the James Ellsworth interview?
Well, for me, it kind of feels like a placeholder. You're right. Some of the matches are predictable. The main event, the way it's been building up, it really feels like it's going to be Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar from what they planned a year ago. And they had to go through a lot of hoops to kind of get Roman Reigns back on track, reuniting with the Shield, getting the fans kind of back on his side again. We're not hearing as many boos as we normally would hear from Roman Reigns when he made an entrance. So yeah, I think that's going to be the direction they're going to go in. Any surprise swerves? I mean, I'd be really surprised if everybody wants Finn Balor to be the number one contender. I get it. I understand it. I mean, when you see the match that Brock Lesnar had with a guy like AJ Styles, and then think what he could do with a guy like Finn Balor, it's not believable. Seth Rollins has some history there. He's making his claim. So it's making it interesting. But again, like you said, it is predictable. As for the women's scenario too, I think it all revolves around Asuka. Like you said, I mean, for Asuka to have worked this hard to get to this point and not be undefeated going to WrestleMania would not make, from a storyline standpoint, any sense. She has so much momentum on her end. And, you know, it begs the question too. I think it's for me, fair to say that when you start building up this whole aura of the undefeated streak of Asuka, we thought it was going to happen around NXT as she was going to make a progression to the main roster, that she was going to eventually lose the title and hand it to somebody. It didn't happen. So who do you lose it to now? people made the accusations.
Well, she can't lose it. She can't lose it until after she wins the championship.
Exactly. So it just begs the question. It puts that kind of question mark in terms of what's going to happen. And then, you know, who knows? They could throw a curveball in there, but I don't see that happening here at Elimination Chamber. Nia Jax breaking that undefeated streak. But if it's not Nia, who can it be? And for the Women's Elimination Chamber match, kind of easy to see where what direction they're going in. It's a first ever Women's Elimination Chamber, so pretty predictable in my mind.
It doesn't seem that it could be a curveball. You're looking for a curveball, a reason to be like, huh, maybe this is worth watching. I don't know what it's going to be. The only thing I can think of, maybe it sets up the matchup with Ronda Rousey. You kind of start planting the seed of where they're going to go with Ronda Rousey because she will be there to sign her Raw contract. So you might want to watch that for that. But it just seems right now, five matches, and you know, obviously it looks like the guys are going to get an hour. The women are going to get maybe 45 to an hour. So it seems like the chamber is going to close the show. The females are going to close it. Although I think it should be the men at this point, just because the star power. I mean, if you're going to give the win, who are you going to have win? It's either going to be Sasha or Bayley. Can a Elimination Chamber end with a Mickey James winning? Could it end with a Sonya Deville winning or a Mandy Rose? I don't think so. I don't think you're going to end the pay-per-view that way. I think the star power is with the men's Elimination Chamber. So,
what about a Sasha Banks?
I'm saying the only two people would be Sasha Banks or Bayley that could be able to close that show. But other than that, could you see Sonya Deville or Mandy Rose or Mickey James close the show, have that importance to the match? I don't think so. I really don't. That's why I think the star power is more with the men's chamber.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and that being, you know, the winner of that one gets to face Brock Lesnar. So how much of a winner can you really be?
It's really a catch 22. It should end with Roman pointing to the sign at Mania. You know, that's how I see it ending. So I don't see where there could be a curveball here for the Elimination Chamber. We'll have our predictions and our previews in just a little bit right after we talk with former WWE superstar James Ellsworth, so gracious for him to give us his time. One more thing before we get to the interview presented by Collar and Elbow, and that is, spend my days working hard on the go, and the hands on the clock keep spinning too slow. What do you think, Double J Jeff Jarrett, a WWE Hall of Famer? Did hell freeze over? Your thoughts, Trendsetter?
My thoughts is you watch too much Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard.
Well, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Jeff Jarrett.
I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight.
Guys, he's been saying that all week, and it's so annoying that he's doing it in that tone of voice, but he's not even trying.
Wait till we get to the Hall of Fame, and then after that, it'll be out of my system, but we gotta...
Well, first of all, you have to make it to the Hall of Fame, Jeff.
A whole month. You keep
this going. You're not going to make it to Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you said that for balls of fire.
Might leave your ass here in Jersey as I go to New Orleans and not having to hear your terrible Grammy singing voice there. But no, in terms of this, it's really surprising. It really is. The fact that, you know...
The timing, maybe, right?
The timing of it. Not necessarily the timing of it, but the mere fact that you never thought this was going to happen. In terms of all the bad blood and the heat he's had within the company, of guys just trashing him, and now to have this, prestigious moment for him in his career. I mean, if you really look at it retrospectively, it does make sense. I mean, you look at his career, his longevity, and what he's done, not necessarily in WWE, but what he's done in WCW, what he did for TNA, what he did for Global Force Wrestling, and all that stuff. He's had a huge impact on the business, so I think
that... No pun intended.
Yeah. Or maybe. But, you know, I think ultimately, yeah, he's well-deserving of it because of just everything he's done and how he's transcended the business to where he is now at this point of his career and his point of his life, where it's not necessarily so much about, oh, I'm not getting my respect, but maybe finally the company and you know, mending that fence where, you know what, we see what you've done, we have acknowledged it, maybe we didn't acknowledge it at that moment where things were really sore and bitter between, you know, Jarrett and the WWE and Vince McMahon. So it's a nice little olive branch they're offering. I think it's well-deserved by Jeff Jarrett. Just surprising, and you didn't expect it to happen.
Well, obviously, Jeff Jarrett, there's no secrets about him with substance abuse and WWE paying for the rehab this past year, actually in 2017. And so maybe at that point, they decided to extend the olive branch, like you said. A lot of people talk about how this could be a Triple H move and how as he slowly progresses to gain power, you've got Jeremy Borash in there. Maybe a guy like Jeff Jarrett could work somewhere on the WWE staff. It's not guaranteed. It could be just a one and done. But you start thinking about that maybe Triple H is starting to align some of his guys that he wants to be his right-hand men when he does maybe take over more stake in WWE, or whether it's to intensify NXT and build that as a stronger brand, get more creative minds behind that. So there's a lot of possibilities here about Jeff Jarrett. My thing is, he's underrated Intercontinental Champion. You don't think of him when you get to the Elite Champions, but he has had long title reigns. He's had it multiple occasions, so he could be an underrated Intercontinental Champion. Another thing, too, about Jeff Jarrett is, you're talking about the wrestler, but also the businessman. Like you were talking about Impact Wrestling, Global Force. The only knock on Jeff is that he's been given so many times to rebuild something, and it just hasn't worked. And they always seem to go back to Jeff Jarrett, and it just hasn't really worked, whether it's financial, whether it's creative, whether it's him aligning himself with Vince Russo, whether it's just making bad decisions. It just doesn't seem that it's worked out, but people give him a chance. It's funny, like automatically Jeff Jarrett gets another chance at Global Force, and like, oh, he's going to build something of it. He tried to combine it with Impact Wrestling. It didn't really go anywhere. So,
well, yes, it was starting to go that way, and then obviously, unfortunately, the circumstances of the substance abuse, he had to kind of relieve himself away from his duties. But you're right. I mean, he's had several opportunities to make something or make a good effort in terms of turning something around, and never came through. So it always started off well, but it's somewhere it tapered away.
But what I admire about Jeff Jarrett is that he kept trying. He kept plugging away, and you don't give up if first you don't succeed. And he tried giving opportunities to everybody else, right? So obviously you can respect that for Jeff Jarrett. And I think everything is, as far as himself, he has put everything, his past, to rest. And I think that this is a great start for maybe, like you said, like a rebirth in WWE. Because so long has been, remember he got fired on TV by Vince McMahon after the whole WCW buyout. So, he did hold.
That was our lasting image of Jeff Jarrett.
He did hold Vince ransom before dropping the Intercontinental title to China. So there was some bad blood there. But like I said, you never say never. And if it's good for business, it's good for business. So Double J Jeff Jarrett is another inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame of 2018 in New Orleans. So that's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to just looking
at the names. You said Jeff Jarrett. You have Ivory, the Dudley Boys. You have Goldberg. It's a pretty lengthy list, and it's still forming in itself, but not a bad card in terms of, we always talk about this after every Hall of Fame, Jeff. How are they going to top it? Who else is out there? And the lists are pretty few, and it gets kind of smaller each year as it goes by, but then you find those people that, you don't really notice or recognize until it actually happens. This scenario with Jeff Jarrett, as well-deserving as it is for him to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, it's not something, like I said, we initially thought was going to happen. But again, hey, we had Macho Man Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame. I'm not comparing the two, but I'm saying those things you thought were never going to happen, Bruno Sammartino, Rick Rude, all those things actually happened. So, never say never in this business, as much as that's a cliche that everybody talks about.
And you talk about never say never. It's a great lead into our guest this week, which is James Ellsworth, former WWE superstar. Never say never, because his story about being a WWE superstar, it was kind of like, very unlikely, and he ended up being the ultimate underdog and then becoming an ultimate heel. And really, in 1 year's time, really stamping his mark in the WWE and the WWE universe. So, having a guy like James Ellsworth on the show and talking to him about his WrestleMania memories, talking about what he's doing now, about social media, talking about other promotions, the way he thinks about wrestling 24/7, it's in his blood, he loves doing it, he's going back to his promotion, and now he's challenging for the NWA Championship against Nick Aldis. He wasn't the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, he was the first. Everyone remembers who was the number one person to challenge Nick Aldis. And if you think about it, if you think about a guy that was half a second from becoming the WWE World Heavyweight Champion, that's got to be amazing for a guy like James Ellsworth when he looks back on his WWE career to be like, man, I almost became the WWE Champion.
Yeah, of course, he definitely would see it that way, but also he looks at it from the standpoint that's a career that's not over yet in terms of what he could still have accomplished in WWE, but ultimately, man, in terms of a story that came out of nowhere, it's definitely great to have James Ellsworth on the show.
Yeah, and this interview is brought to you by Collar and Elbow. It is an apparel brand founded by Al Snow, mixing wrestling passion with street fashion, from cool-looking flex-fit caps to great-looking men's and women's shirts. Check out the entire winter fashion line, including brand-new long-sleeve shirts and hoodies. You got to go to collarxelbowbrand.com and save 10% on your entire online purchase by just entering promo code HIGHSPOTPODCAST, all in caps. So our guest this week is James Ellsworth. We talk about his intergender list. We talk about his intergender championship. I mean, we also talk about his time in WWE, his thoughts on superstars like Shinsuke Nakamura, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles. But first, we ask him what it was like to challenge Nick Aldis for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. 10 pounds of gold, what it was like to be number one challenger. And here is our interview with James Ellsworth on the High Spot Podcast on Cheap Hop's Podcast Network. All right, Trendsetter, joining us now is James Ellsworth, formerly of WWE. Just want to say he had one of the most unlikeliest careers in World Wrestling Entertainment, but in a good way. And we're so thankful that he joins us here today on the High Spot Podcast. James, how are you?
I'm great, man. It's good to be here on the High Spot Podcast.
Thanks so much, James. So listen, you obviously, like I was telling Trendsetter, it's the unlikeliest stories that you can imagine in the WWE, but in a good way. And also, you know, you've done everything, and now most recently challenging for the NWA Championship, not being the third, fifth, sixth, but being the first one to challenge Nick Aldis. Talk about your transition from WWE to going back to the independents. How has that been?
So far, so good. I'm enjoying myself. I have a lot of, bookings and shows and signings coming up. Like, everything is going well with that. The NWA thing, man, when I was in WWE, I saw they were doing those videos that are, you know, all over the net and on YouTube and on their, the NWA, you can subscribe to them on YouTube. And I'm like, man, these videos are good. I always, thought they were neat videos. So once I got released, I contacted them and I said, hey, I'm not sure what you guys are doing, but you know, this stuff looks cool and I could be a part of it. And you know, Dave Lugano of the NWA, he wrote me back and he said, hey, I talked to Billy Corrigan and we're both fans of your work and we will definitely, you know, use you for stuff. And that's how that came about.
Talk about your interaction with Dave Lugano and, you know, Billy Corgan. Just talk about how they're trying to revive the NWA. Obviously, there's been some lost years with the NWA, of course, that was the belt to get if you weren't in WWE. Just talk about your experience with NWA and what it was like to be the first to challenge Nick Aldis for that 10 pounds of gold.
Well, I flew out to L.A. I met with Lugano and Aldis. We had dinner, and he's, you know, telling me, like, you know, Corrigan has a 20-year plan for the NWA. What it consists of fully, I'm not clearly sure, but, you know, Corrigan, he's a smart businessman. He was part of one of the biggest, you know, rock bands of the 90s, and he's a big wrestling fan, been a wrestling fan his whole life, which is good, you know, so he knows what fans want to see, because he's seen it through his eyes of a fan, and, you know, just meeting with them, they have a lot of good ideas. And like I said, I don't know what all it consists of, the 20-year plan, but, Lugano, he's a great guy. I like talking to him. He used to write for WWE and for TNA, so he's been around the business a long time, too. And Aldis, I mean, he just looks like a champion, man. You look at him, you go, yeah, this guy would have been NWA World Champion back in the 70s and 80s as well. If you just take one look at him, he just looks like he should be a champion.
James, it's Brian here. And again, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a few minutes of your time. I was always just curious, being, you know, when something like that happens where you're doing really good in the WWE and then you get released, you know, we saw what happened to Emma. Cody decided to kind of go off and venture on his own and kind of bettered himself. At what point for you personally did you get to the point where obviously it's shocking, it's surprising, you're trying to cope with, you know, what I did wrong, what I should have done. At what point did you kind of settle yourself down and say, you know what, enough's enough, I got to move on and move on to other things?
Well, like you said, it was shocking. I didn't see it coming. I thought everything was going well. I thought, you know, and I still think, like, the character has, you know, more stuff to do there that would entertain people. But, you know, they didn't think that way, and that's fine. You know, I feel like Vince McMahon has built an empire, and he's the smartest man in the business, and I appreciate the opportunity he gave me. But yeah, like, to me, my just humbled opinion, I was shocked. I thought there was so much left to do. But, man, I took one day and, like, you know, was sad about it and just, you know, thinking all these things in my head, like, man, why is this happening? What's going on? I took one day. Then the next day, the day after the release, I woke up and I said, you know what? I'm not going to just sit around 90 days and do nothing. Let's get to work. Like, and I worked on my my new email address to get bookings, bookellsworth@gmail.com. I got that together. And right away, I was like, man, the last thing I did on TV was mess up the women's division, which was great. I was like, man, we'll get an intergender title ready, and I'll wrestle women on the indies for the intergender title, and I'll make a list like Cody did, but it'll be all girls. That'll be entertaining. Like, I just started thinking of, like, what could keep me occupied and keep me in the eye of, like, you know, people on the internet, and still entertain people, like, not being in WWE, but still have people pay attention to me and get, you know, like, still be able to entertain people and do fun stuff. So I took one day, and right away I started thinking of ways to do that.
James, was there somebody influential in WWE that, for example, like, kind of like helped you to be, helped your creative juices? Because obviously this is really smart, because of course Cody made, you know, his list of people he'd want to take on the independents. Of course, you, obviously, your last match was with Becky Lynch. So you decided to make a list of all the females on the independents. You even have the intergender belt. Anybody helped your creative juices in WWE that made you, you know, want to do something like this when you left?
No, I just, like, dude, like, I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. Been watching wrestling my whole life. I've always just, my whole life, all thought that was wrestling. And, like, wait, like, you know, and I've been wrestling since I was 17. I run my own promotion called Adrenaline Championship Wrestling, and check it out at adrenalinewrestling.com and all that. Like, so I'm always thinking of ways, like, things to do and ways to do it and storylines and angles, and just, like, it was just, man, like, I knew, like, if there's any inspiration to it, it's Andy Kaufman, because I loved Andy Kaufman stuff going back to those, you know, obviously I was very young when Andy Kaufman was doing his thing, but, like, watching those old Memphis tapes of him and Lawler and all that, you know, and him wrestling girls, back in the 80s, obviously, you can get away with more. I couldn't get away with half the stuff Andy Kaufman got away with.
No, but, not nowadays. You can't do that.
That's the only inspiration maybe to the intergender title was Andy Kaufman. And it's funny because I already wrestled Jerry Lawler. I wrestled him the other day. But I think next time I wrestle him, I'm going to have Jimmy Hart in my corner and do the whole deal, you know?
What was it like getting in the ring with Jerry Lawler? I mean, it was for ACW Homecoming, your return. What was it like to get in the ring with Jerry? You probably had just maybe have seen him maybe a few months ago in WWE. Like, you know, what's your thoughts of getting in the ring with Jerry Lawler?
Well, I had, when I was in WWE, probably like the month before I got released, I did Jerry Lawler's podcast, Dinner with the King. Yeah. And on the podcast, he's like, man, at first, James, I didn't understand why they signed you or hired you. He said, but as I kept watching you and just watching you talk on the microphone and watching, you know, the spots you did, like, and just tell stories, I'm like, and he was like, man, I was wrong about this kid. This kid knows what he's doing, and he's good. He knows how to tell a story. And he told me that right on his podcast. So I remembered that. I remember stuff like that. I always do. And, you know, as soon as I got released, I was like, well, I'm going to run a show in my hometown. It'll be my first official appearance. You know, I had some surprise appearances before then that WWE allowed me to do where I wasn't advertised. But this was my first official appearance where I was advertised. I was like, man, wouldn't that be great if I brought in Jerry Lawler? And when I called him, I didn't, like, he was just like, well, you know, I told him my idea of wrestling me, and he's like, oh, yeah, great, I'd love to come do that. And I just remembered that he talked so nicely about me on that podcast. I was like, yeah, I'm bringing Jerry in, and he's a legend. He's good to put on a flyer and attract people. Or, you know, people from all ages know who Jerry the King Lawler is, so obviously it helped the show out, too. And, you know, I consider him a friend now, and that's how it came about, and it was great getting in the ring with him.
James, how could you describe the difference from the point you just mentioned how you grew up watching professional wrestling, you loved it as a kid growing up, and now, for example, you're in the WWE now, and you're meeting some of these legends that you grew up watching? I mean, at that point in your career, are you more like, okay, I consider myself at the same level in terms of a peer because I've been doing this for a while, or do you still kind of go crazy like, oh my God, that's Jerry Lawler, or, oh my God, that's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or Pat Patterson? Do you mark out at any point when you're there?
Sometimes. Like, not all the time. I'm always business. Like, I respect those guys, everyone you just named. Like, it's a respect thing to me. If I see a Pat Patterson or a Jerry Lawler, I must go up to them and shake their hand and say, hi, Pat, how are you doing? Hi, Jerry, how are you doing? Like, so when I see those guys, the first thing that pops in my head is to do that, go pay my respects and show my respects because they deserve it. And that's just the way I was brought into the business by Axel Rotten, to always do that. But, yeah, man, sometimes, like, you know, like, you're there and you're like, man, I'm, like, standing in the ring with The Undertaker right before the Survivor Series, or, man, like, I'm at WrestleMania, or, man, I'm, like, wrestling John Cena. Like, you do get those moments of, like, wow, I'm really doing this? Like, this is cool. Like, you know, but I always kept it very businesslike and didn't try to go, oh, my God, when I was growing up, you were my favorite. Oh, I didn't try to do any of that because...
Oh, no, of course. You must have felt that way internally, though, James, right?
Oh, absolutely, of course. You know, anybody would lie to say they don't, you know.
James, it started basically when you took on Braun Strowman, and of course everybody knows the any man with two hands has a fighting chance, which obviously with your creative juices, this is something that maybe, you know, just popped in your head. But now, where Braun Strowman is now, could you see that this was kind of the direction where Braun Strowman was going to be, that he was going to be like kind of like this on the upstart to major things when you got in the ring with him? Could you sense that he had it?
Absolutely. Like, you just take one look at that guy and you go, this guy is going to be a star. Like, he just, I mean, he looks so different from everyone. He's bigger than everyone, and he's just got this different vibe, you know. Like, Andre the Giant had a different vibe, and, you know, it just, like, I knew he was going to be a star, man. And plus, like, that was his first time outside the Wyatts, so you can tell he wanted to do stuff with him because he was outside the Wyatts, and he was getting a push right away, like, you know, beating local guys, and then, he's been very protected. And he deserves it, man. People love him. Like, to me, like, I hopefully he's the next big thing, because I do think he has it. Yeah, and I thought so that night when I wrestled him.
What were your thoughts on AJ Styles, for example? You spent a lot of time in that rivalry with him and Dean Ambrose. You're an integral part of that. People could have called it like a triangle type of angle where you're influential in terms of working with AJ. What was it like talking to him in terms of, you know, speaking with him and gaining some type of experience or some type of, some wisdom in terms of AJ, because he's been around the business for quite a while?
Well, AJ Styles is just as good of a human being as he is a wrestler, and that's saying a lot. Like, he's the best wrestler in the world, in my humble opinion, and a lot of people's opinions, he's the best in the world. And just, you know, talking to him and Dean, which, you know, they both came from the independents as well, so, you know, they knew I was just any guy that you know, spend my time and, you know, pay my dues, and they treated me very well, and, you know, I treated them with respect because they, you know, obviously they've earned it. And we had so much fun with that, man. And so did the fans. Like, that was just a fun, like, angle, like, with all three of us. Like, I think when people look back at SmackDown Live, not SmackDown, you know, because the new show since the brand split has been SmackDown Live. Mm-hmm. Like, when people think of SmackDown Live, I think that'll be one of the first rivalries they'll think of is, yeah, AJ, Dean, and I. Like, it was a lot of fun for us and for the fans.
I want to talk about after that, then you have the program with Carmella, and, you know, they put you guys together. And hearing you on Jericho's podcast saying how, like, maybe, you know, I think Carmella kind of approached them to put you guys together. And then, of course, the infamous night of Money in the Bank. Did you realize that once you went to get that Money in the Bank briefcase that you were going to get all this heat by the smart wrestling fans?
Absolutely, man. I knew it, and I love that, because I love, like, you know, I love being babyface or a heel, but just those smart mark wrestling fans, and I love them too, but I like getting under their skin. It's just fun for me. So I knew when I was going to do that, which I found out that day. And believe it or not, I tell people this, and I might not have said this on any podcast yet or any interview yet, like, I guessed that's what was going to happen a week before it happened. I was telling Carmella, I was like, you know, it'd be funny if they would just have me go up and grab it, just give it to you. And she's like, oh, no, they can't do that. I'm like, well, it'd be funny if they did. And then it happened. So I remember just telling her, oh, look, it's happening. Guys, I guessed it a week ago. Again, a lifelong wrestling fan. But, yeah, man, I love, you know, the outburst and all. And it popped the rating when we did the when we did SmackDown that Tuesday, our ratings were up from previous weeks, and it popped the rating when they did the rematch the week after for the Money in the Bank contract. It popped another rating, so it worked. It did what it was supposed to do.
And what do you prefer? Because obviously, when we first saw you, of course, the first thing is sympathetic playing for the underdog, right? But then you have this ability, too, to get that heat. I mean, it just shows how diverse you were in being able to be the underdog and then going to be that heel where people actually hated you for doing that and supposedly ruining the women's opportunity, their first ever Money in the Bank, right?
Right, and man, like, after that, I was feeling being a heel. Like, if you go back, and I did promos with the girls, like, where I'm getting on the girls, and the best ones were the ones with Daniel Bryan, where I'm just in Daniel Bryan's face, and I felt it. Like, I felt it with the people. They started chanting Ellsworth sucks and all the good heat, and I was feeling the character. Like, I really got into it, and it was a shame, because I remember as I was getting into it, and as it was going well for her and I, we had a lot of heat. We would come out of the house shows, the live events, and I mean, like, we'd just get booed out of the building. I would grab the mic and just introduce her, and it would just be a lot of heat. And I was feeling, I was like, man, this is going great. And then I went to TV one day, and they're like, yeah, we're going to do an angle where Daniel Bryan suspends you for 30 days, which I think they may have had to do, because, like, I was doing so many, like, I was, you know, defying his authority and getting in his face, and they couldn't have him beat me up, because obviously they don't let him, you know, wrestle or, you know,
get physical, right?
Get
physical.
Touched. Yeah, get any physicality they don't have with Daniel Bryan. So they had to pay it off, because the things with the TV angle with him and I was getting heated. So they had to pay it off. I you know, to me, just like, my idea would have been for him to pay it off and put me in a match with, like, Luke Harper or something, or where I'd get killed. But maybe they thought that wasn't the way to go, and the suspension angle was. But I was like, man, we got all this heat right now. Like, I don't want to be off TV for a month, and like, because the heat's great. And like, when I came back after that 30 days of that angle where I was suspended, like, Carmella was wrestling Naomi. It was in Toronto. I'll never forget it. And like, I'm hiding out under the ring because that's my comeback. And I just remember the crowd chant, "We want Ellsworth," and I'm like, ah, well, they missed me. So there's the heat. Like, yeah, no more heat. Yeah. Like, it just. Like, so I felt it, man. I loved after the Money Bank. I thought it was very well done, a very well done written up angle. And, you know, creative gets a lot of slack, but dude, sometimes stuff is really good. It's hard to write TV every week, and it's hard. Like, it's gotta be a hard job, man. And you gotta please a lot of people when you do that job, and they get a lot of slack, but it's not easy. And I always told these guys, man, I don't envy you guys. I know your job's hard. I know you get a lot of slack, but I mean, every now and then you got to give them props. That was a cool thing when I did that.
No, it definitely was. And like you said, generating all that excitement, that reaction from the crowd is obviously what you guys live for in terms of that reaction. But what I always find interesting is that, you know, from your perspective, James, is it when you look at it from both directions, you're both a fan and you're in professional wrestling. Are you able to see it from both sides? In terms of, you know, you see it from the business standpoint of it, but you can see it from the fans' point of, you know, them getting frustrated with certain things and wanting to get things done? Or is it more of just, you know, you can't please everybody, basically, in this business?
Oh, yeah. Well, everyone would do things differently. You'll never be able to please everyone fully, ever. Like, it's never going to happen where you please everyone. And, like, I do, like, what I do is, personally, I sit back, I look at things from a fan's perspective and a wrestler's perspective. I go, okay, well, let's my, the fan side of me tells me this, and the wrestler side of me tells me this. I do look at it both ways. I do my best to try.
James, now, for example, we talked about stars like Cody taking a chance on himself, leaving, making himself a bigger star. Same thing was for Drew McIntyre. He's come back to NXT, of course, but now there seems to be, like, wrestling, professional wrestling is on a boom, especially on the independent scene. You obviously are a fan. You see what's going on, even while you're in WWE, like Bullet Club, Kenny Omega, Young Bucks. Just your thoughts on being on the boom of professional wrestling, especially on the independent scene right now. You're obviously have an advantage because you've been in WWE, your name is fresh, but now you're going to the independent scene. Talk about the boom, you know, of the independents.
Well, when I was first coming up on the independents, you didn't have all these, like, good independent companies. There would be, like, one good company in maybe 25 states, and then you'd have the rest of them. Like, now there's good companies everywhere. There's more indies everywhere. And I think it's, you know, some of it has to do with, But there is no other alternative. The WWE, you know, that's on a national scale every week at a the same time that everybody has. So it's like, I think people want to see something different. And these, you know, and independents are doing great. Like this week alone, man, I'm wrestling Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I have a 5-day loop coming up tomorrow. Like, and it's great. And I'm excited. And the main thing I'm excited about, and I don't say this to be cliche, I love wrestling fans. And at independent shows, you get to meet the wrestling fans up close and personal. You don't get to do a lot of that WWE. I mean, which I try my best to do. Like, before every show, I went out and signed. And there's fans all over the net that say that. Like, James always comes out and signed. I did before every house show, before every TV. If I saw him in the airport, because I was always so appreciative what fans did for me, you know, helping me fulfill my dream of being in WWE. I always made sure to take the time out for him. So now I can't wait to meet him at all these independent shows that I'm going to be performing on.
With that being said, and all the independent shows, and you're a busy guy, you're booked, and like I said, you're gracious to give us a few minutes of your time because, you know, you're going on loops and doing a lot of things now. With the boom, like Jeff talked about, in professional wrestling, and how, you know, when you go on the internet, social media, Twitter, all that, you know, in terms of branding yourself, it's a lot more, you have a lot more access to the fans in terms of what you were maybe 10 years ago where you had that ability. But
right.
Yeah, but speaking of that, though, talking about the ability of connecting with the audience, what would you say in terms of, you know, with certain people leaving or certain people may be frustrated, you know, a certain storyline isn't going their way. Is it clear to say now, ultimately, it's fair to say that WWE is the place to be, everyone wants to go there, but is there life outside WWE? Because most people think, oh, when somebody gets released, somebody leaves, they get fired, oh, that's it for them. There is life out there.
Yeah, there's definitely life out there. There's been guys telling me, like, man, like Matt Sydal, I saw at a indie show in Toronto a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, he's been off WWE TV, what, like 5-6 years now? And he's been making a living, and, there's definitely ways to make a living outside of WWE. You got to be innovative. Like the social media stuff of this intergender title I'm doing, like, you got to make people go, man, I want to go to an independent show and see him, you know, do this or that. And like, there's ways to do it. And like I said, now there's so many independent companies. And I think if you go to these shows and you're respectful and you do good by the promoter, like, they'll have you back in the future. Because, like, man, James was, you know, he came here, it was nice to everybody, shook everybody's hand, treated everybody with respect. And then you go back, you know, to the same company. And there's so many independents all over the world. It's just not in the U.S., all over the world, the United Kingdom, Japan, Australia. Like, there's just indies everywhere. I'm going to China to wrestle this year on an independent. Like, they're everywhere. So there is definitely life after WWE. I love WWE. I had a blast there. I appreciate everything they've done for me. And, you know, hopefully you'll see me there again someday. And a lot of, you know, when fans talk to me so far at these independent shows, they're like, man, I know you'll be back. Like, I can't wait till you come back. And I don't know if and when and how I'm coming back, but, you know, hopefully I do, just for the fans' sake, because I think that they enjoyed the character and I enjoyed portraying that character.
Is that a humbling feeling, James, when you hear that from the audience and them telling you, man, you're going to be back there anytime soon, because they appreciate the work that you did?
Yeah, it's funny, man. When I'm there, like, obviously I pay attention to everything. When I'm there, like, at first the fans love me. Then, what really annoyed the fans, like, about me is when I just kept beating AJ. Like, I really just...
you had some people on some shows being like, oh, I can't stand Ellsworth. Why is he even in the same ring with AJ Styles?
Right. But you did your job.
They call themselves smart marks or smart fans. Like, obviously, if you're smart, you know that's not me doing it. Like, you know what I'm like... So as time went on and like that, you know, and everything, like when they released me, I saw like a lot of the same people, like on a lot of the podcasts and like voiceovers that I heard and everything going, like that were saying, man, get rid of Ellsworth. This sucks. And I'm going, man, I really wish they wouldn't have got rid of him. I was anxious to see what he was going to do next. Like, it was like,
you won them over, basically.
Wrestling fans are so fickle, James. It's ridiculous.
I love them. I do.
Yeah, no.
I love them.
Yeah, one yeah. Second they're like, oh, Roman Reigns, and then the next thing they're like, oh, man, wait a minute, you know, he needs to be main eventing. You know, it's just fans are so different. But here's my chance. He's been – Roman Reigns is a lightning rod on a lot of, you know, social media, on
podcasts, on wrestling shows. Your thoughts on Roman Reigns, and just do people give him a bad rap and don't know him, know that he's really good? Like what's the rap on Roman Reigns?
Yeah, my 100% opinion on him is what an outstanding talent performer. How many good pay-per-view matches has Roman Reigns have? Like 100 at this point? Like, he's awesome. He's an awesome performer. I just think it's going to be hard for anyone that the machine pushes for now on. Like with Cena, it's been that way. For Reigns, it's that way. And you almost, you know, wonder if, okay, what if the machine gets behind Strowman and starts pushing him real hard next? Like, you know, because Roman Reigns was getting reactions like Strowman's getting right now before, you know, like that one Royal Rumble where Batista won. Remember, the crowd wanted Reigns to win? And then, you know, then once they started pushing Reigns, the following year when he did win the Rumble, they booed him out of the building. It's kind of like it's going to be hard for anyone. The machine, they can, like, the fans can tell the machine's behind them now. It's hard for them. It's kind of like, all right, well, that's their guy now. He's not our guy anymore. Like, it's gonna, you know, just, you know, unless you're like an indie darling, like an AJ Styles or a Seth Rollins or a guy that won, you know, was like real hard on the indies. Like, that loud minority is what I call them, the guys in the arenas. That's the minority. It's not the majority. It's the minority that start the chants and start booing Roman Reigns, and they're the loud minority. That's all. Like, Roman Reigns, his merchandise sells well. Little kids love him. Girls love him. And he's an outstanding wrestler. Go back and watch his matches. If anyone thinks he sucks as a wrestler, please go watch his matches. He's outstanding. He's an outstanding performer.
Now, the Rumble was in Philly this year again, and we were thinking, whoa, there's no way Roman Reigns is going to win it again in Philly. But actually, a friend of yours, a person you really got close with on SmackDown, Shinsuke Nakamura, your thoughts on him winning the Royal Rumble and him going on and probably going to, you know, probably 100% take on AJ Styles at Mania. Just your thoughts on Nakamura finally, you know, going to WrestleMania and then him winning the Rumble.
Well, Nakamura, everybody, he's just a fun guy to watch. He's different, and you know, him and I are friends, and, you know, he texted me when I got released, said, James, I'm sorry. And he put something real nice on his Instagram and all, like a picture of him and I surfing. And, you know, he's my buddy, and yeah, he's what an outstanding talent he is, you know, known all around the world. Japan obviously is a big wrestling country, and that helps in that market over there for WWE. And everyone wants to see AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura go at it at WrestleMania. All the fans wanted that, and now they're getting it. And I think, you know, that's WWE going, okay, let's give the fans what they want. Let's give them Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles. They might not like, you know, the loud minority again. Might go, oh, man, we're going to get another Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. But on the same night, you're going to get, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles.
It's like you said, James, you can't please them all, right? At least we get AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. Us, the loud minority, finally give us what we want, and they finally gave it to us.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a wrestling show should have something for everyone. Like, not everyone, and I I'll always notice, not everyone's going to love the James Ellsworth character, but, you know, a lot of people did, and I was, you know, a fun part of the show. And then, like, not everyone's going to like Roman Reigns because he looks like, well, Roman Reigns is every guy wants to look like Roman Reigns. If you don't want to look like Roman Reigns, you're lying. He's jacked. He's big. He's, you know, girls like him. So not everybody's going to want to cheer that. Like, you know, a wrestling show should have a little bit for everybody because you're not going to please everybody. So it's, you know, that's the way I look at it when I run my shows. Okay, well, I'm going to have a girls match because people like girls matches. I'm going to have a comedy guy because people like comedy guy. I'm going to have big guys wrestling. And, you know, it's like a circus. You have your elephants, you have your clowns, you have your acrobats. That's what a wrestling show is.
James, one more thing about Shinsuke Nakamura, Jeff was talking about. You know, what do you think is the reason why he's transcended as well as opposed to other international stars? I mean, you look at Shinsuke and Asuka, they've transcended well with the, you know, the audiences from NXT that you could call them the die hardcores, and then moving on to the main rosters, they still get that following. What is it about Shinsuke you think that separates him, that allows him to transcend to the audience while other international stars in the past probably weren't as successful?
Well, he has this, here's the thing, he has this really cool entrance, right?
Yes.
And then once the bell rings, it doesn't stop being cool. Like, he's still cool once the bell rings. Everything about him is cool. He has his awesome entrance. Then when he gets in the ring and he wrestles, he lives up to the hype of his entrance. Like, he's just a very cool thing. Asuka, too. Asuka has a cool entrance, and she gets in the ring, and she lives up to the hype. They're just fun to watch, like, both of them. I thought it was so cool. They both won the respective Royal Rumbles because they're, you know, both from Japan, and it's just a really cool thing. And I think WWE definitely got it right this year with the Royal Rumble winners. And both of them are just entertaining as soon as they come through the curtain until they go back through the curtain. And everything in between Asuka and Shinsuke both do, it's entertaining the whole time. And I think that's what separates them from a lot of other people in the business.
You know, they talk about the women's revolution, but I think one day WWE should really do a 24/7 on the Japanese revolution, right? Because you have both, Japanese superstars, you know, going to WrestleMania, fighting for respective titles there. But, you know, you talk about women's wrestling, and you are going, now that you've left WWE, you're doing the intergender thing. Do you think that the success of what the females have done in WWE and in recently the last couple of years have had like a calling for intergender matches, where like recently you had a Brian Cage take on a Tessa Blanchard, where people actually want to see the men mix up with the females? Do you think it's something that the women have validated the last couple of years that make this, you know, not just a act, it's actually something valid that they could see a man and a woman face each other in the ring?
Oh, absolutely. And Tessa Blanchard, she's a talented young lady, man. I watch clips of that match. I haven't watched the full thing, the one you're talking about. Like I say, I pay attention to everything.
Yeah.
Tessa's just, I have no clue why she's not signed yet. Like, I don't know what it is, because, I mean, she's a beautiful girl. She's very talented in the ring. Like, she has the Blanchard last name. She has everything WWE, like, looks for, I think. I don't know what the deal is, but hopefully she gets signed one day, because she's very, very talented. And back to the intergender wrestling thing, I just think it's an entertaining thing on any wrestling show. Like, Becky and I think we have probably over 3 or 4 million views on our intergender match on YouTube, and I know it popped the it's funny, because I know it did good. It was a highly rated segment that night on WWE on SmackDown, like the week later was my last SmackDown, that they were, you know, coming to me telling me, hey man, that your segment with Becky last night drew a great rating, and I'm like, oh cool, and I'm just like, the next day I was relieved. I was like, what? Because people are, you know, just entertained by, you know, if you're not a wrestling fan, think of it this way. If you're not a wrestling fan and you're flipping through channels and you see a guy wrestling a girl, even if you're not a wrestling fan, you're going to sit down the remote for a second and take a look at this, because it's fun. It's just fun. It's a fun thing. It always has been. Anytime they did it in the Attitude Era, or Andy Kaufman, it goes back 30 years, 35 years. People have always been entertained by a guy wrestling a girl. Like, when Married with Children, when Al got in the ring with Big Mama.
I remember that. Oh, yeah. Awesome show, like, James. Awesome show.
Yeah, man. So, the Brian Cage and Tessa, like I said, I've seen clips of it. I am going to watch the whole thing, I'm sure people are talking. They're talking about it, like you and I are talking about it right now. It's just something people are intrigued by, and I think it's going to be around for a while. And I hope WWE does more of it. I was hoping to do more of it there. I was hoping to wrestle every girl in the SmackDown roster. So,
hey, you might get that opportunity down the road. You never know, James, in this business, right? As cliche as it sounds, you never know. Anything can happen, basically. But
call me tomorrow. Who knows? You're right.
Exactly. You never know. But, with that being said, I mean, just talking about Tessa Blanchard, do you think sometimes with a lot of talent that's out there right now, I mean, there's a huge amount of great talent out there in the indie scene all across the country, and a lot of people always ask the question, well, why isn't Tessa Blanchard signed? Why isn't Kenny Omega signed? What's going on? I mean, Ricochet and, War Machine recently got signed, and Candice LeRae. Do you think a lot of the reason why maybe they're not signed, I mean, if you're from the talent's perspective, of course you want to go WWE, but do you think maybe in the long term they're probably like, well, it's probably good I'm not being signed right now because there's probably no space for me right there at that moment for me to be used. It's probably best I build myself.
Well, Kenny Omega, I just think, and I have no clue if this is true or not, but I just think he's not there because he doesn't want to be there right now. Like, I think if he wanted to be there right now, he would be there because he's such a big star. They would probably love to sign him. Why wouldn't they? With him, I think it's just because he's not ready to go there, or either A, he's not ready, or B, he doesn't want to. I don't know which one it is because I don't know Kenny personally, but I think if he wanted to be there, he would. With Tessa, I don't know. I don't know Tessa either. I'll see her in a couple of weeks. Her and I are on the show together. I just like thought WWE for her would be a great fit. Like, I mean, wouldn't it be great if like Charlotte Flair and Tessa Blanchard were, you know, like, you know, just coming out together and, you know, like on a television duo, like, wouldn't that be awesome? To me, that would be, as a wrestling fan, that would be great. And Tessa's just very talented. So I don't know if it's her, she doesn't want to go, or they just haven't made the call yet. I mean, I'm assuming one day it'll happen, but I have no clue if it's her going, oh, I'm not ready yet, or if it's them going, we don't want to sign her yet. It's one or the other. Either way, I don't know.
It's all timing, you know. It's all probably like, you know, when is the right time to go.
Right.
You know, it's got to be just a matter of time before they do it. And, James, me and Brian here believe that you're not, that you will be back with WWE soon. I think it's just that James Ellsworth character is on hiatus, and you know that's what we really believe because you know, you're too good, and obviously as far as like, you know, just the way you talk as a fan and you care about the ratings, and you're there's the booker inside you there that, you know, it's you'd be a huge asset wherever you go. You talked about Kenny Omega. Of course, somebody too that you've made great friends with is Chris Jericho. Just your thoughts on that whole Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho match in New Japan, and just this, how Chris Jericho keeps surprising people, and just your thoughts of Chris Jericho being one of the best to ever perform in professional wrestling.
Just Jericho is so innovative, man, and always has been. He always gets with the times, like, just like he knows what's gonna work, like, and you know, him sitting at home going, all right, well, if I go back to WWE right now, I'll be in a mid-card, you know, angle, and I'll go to WrestleMania, and I'll be in a mid-card match. You know, that's cool, and obviously, you know, like, that's very prestigious to have a WrestleMania match or to be on WWE television, but, you know, he's done it all there. So instead, he sits at home, and he goes, wow, well, this Kenny Omega guy is getting a lot of attention, and, you know, he's very popular on, like, in New Japan and, you know, all over the world. Man, wouldn't it be great if I wrestled him? Wouldn't wrestling fans just love that? And that's good business. That's good for the business. That's good for Jericho. It's good for WWE because it keeps, like, you know, they look at Jericho as a WWE guy, the fans do. And it's just overall good business for everybody. And that's like you said, I care about the ratings and the segments. Yeah, I just, like, I want to do good business wherever I go, whether it's WWE, an independent show, NWA, like, wherever I go, I want to help the show, you know, be successful. That's just the way I feel. I want this, and number one, I just want the fans to be entertained by it. If I don't think the fans are being entertained, I kind of tend to speak up about it because I care about it so much. Maybe I shouldn't sometimes, but like, I'm never mean about it when I do, but like, I just kind of like, I don't know if the fans will like that. And then, you know, I always do what I'm told at the end of the day. I never say no to anything, but, you know, because it's a show and people are paying you to do it, and, you know, that's your job. But it's kind of like with Jericho and Omega, I think he did that because he knew the fans would love that, and it's just a good business move by him, and he's the smartest guy in the business, in my humble opinion.
James, I mean, thank you so much for being gracious with your time and talking to us here. One final one for me before we close this up. When you look back and reflect on your time in WWE, what to you was your favorite moment? What was, whether it was your first WrestleMania, whether it was a program with AJ Styles, whether it was working with Braun, just your favorite moment in WWE?
I'll tell you, you know, you talked about earlier having like those like mark out moments or whatever. I'll never forget this moment, man. Like, it just felt like you're inside a dream or like you're in heaven or just one of those weird moments. Like, it's like in a movie where everything just slows down and music's playing in the background. Like, those moments in a movie. Like, I'm in the ring, you know, main event of SmackDown, and I'm wrestling AJ Styles for the WWE title, WWE Championship. And I'm standing there in the corner, and I'm watching the referee raise the title, and I'm like, man, I'm wrestling for the WWE title. This is the greatest moment of my life, and that was the dream come true. I'm in the ring in the main event of a television show, WWE television show, wrestling for the WWE title, and that's a moment I'll never forget, and that was definitely my favorite moment when I was there.
James Ellsworth.
I thought James was going to say is the moment his shirt sold out completely on
WWE Shop. Oh, yeah, James, your shirt too. How crazy was that when you talk about looking at the ratings? How about looking at the buys for
your
for
merch
t-shirts?
Show right there?
I came to TV next week, and trust me, I was paying attention to the sales on WWEShop.com. Like, and I noticed like that they
sold out.
Sold out. Like, I was like, whoa! And obviously, I didn't say anything to anybody at WWE, but when I went to the TV the next week, and they're all just smiling at me, and they're like, and they hadn't like, and I wasn't signed yet, so they had to like pay me right away for the the shirts being sold. So they had like another check ready for me to like, well, we ordered more. There'd be up at shop tonight. So, for the show, I was, I love wrestling fans and I owe a lot to them because that was another thing they did for me.
James Ellsworth, ladies and gentlemen. James, thanks so much for coming on the High Spot Podcast. Really appreciate your time. And hopefully you talk down the road in the future.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. All right, our thanks to James Ellsworth once again for joining us. Obviously, really busy, has a plate full of matches and dates that he's booked for. Of course, we will see him on March 10th for Warriors of Wrestling. Plus, he'll also be in Totowa, New Jersey this Saturday for an SWF event. So if you want to go see him in Totowa, New Jersey, he will be there. James Ellsworth is our guest. Man, what a story. What an unlikely story for James Ellsworth to be in the WWE, but have what amazing career and be tag team with Carmella, fight Becky Lynch in his final match, and be able to do what he wants to do now that he's outside of it. Fought Jerry Lawler in a match, gets high praises by everybody. James Ellsworth really had an amazing run, and we believe that he's just on hiatus. He will be back.
Yeah, because there's so much he can do still with that character, as he talked about during the interview. I mean, the main thing I got away from the interview, Jeff, and just talking to James and just, you know, how much of a fan he really is and how much he loves the business, you get that sense when you hear him talk and talk about it and his experiences, not only in WWE, but what he's doing now currently and how he started off in that moment. But, this is a guy that just basically had an opportunity and then completely took advantage of it. And that's something that, you know, a life lesson we can all learn, basically. Sometimes, you know, opportunities aren't given to you. You have to earn them. You have to work for them. But sometimes you find yourself at the right place at the right time, which is something you and I are desperately trying to do in our lives. But
we'll get there.
But ultimately, the main point is once you've gotten that opportunity, it depends on what you do with it. You know, and James has, you know, I'm sure he doesn't think it's a success because he feels there's so much more he could have done. And it was a huge surprise that he was let go and they felt that they exhausted as much as they can from that character and he thought differently about it.
Yeah, because he has his Booker hat on and he knows that he could have done more with the character. So, but like I said, James Ellsworth, it's not goodbye. We'll see you later, because I definitely think that character can come back like you were talking about.
Yeah, but definitely he would look at it as maybe a failure because he didn't get to do everything he wanted to do, but everybody else that looked at him, admires him, and sees what he's done and used that as an example or some type of a roadmap for themselves, look at that as a success because nobody expected him to be there for that long period of time if I was a one and done or when he's done with this angle and became the laughing joker. How much longer are we going to see James Ellsworth? How much longer to the point where he actually proved not only to the people in the back and the management and the creative that he deserved to be there, he proved it to the audience too. And that's basically what you draw. You draw on that audience, you draw on that reaction, and it worked for him. So really excited, and his merchandise sold like hell, man. So like,
I love that question. More shirt. That was awesome.
Yeah, more power to him. I mean, for the mere fact that he wasn't signed and was selling out more merchandise out there and all his shirts were getting order when it was basically just a shirt of his face, how can you top that, man?
Chance McMahon.
That's getting over more than anything. So high praises to him. Like, you're right. I think it's not going to be the last time we see him on WWE programming, but right now it's probably good for him to take a little break around here. And what's cool about him is he took the time to kind of mourn the fact that it happened, and he's moved on, and he continues on. Life continues on. There's life outside WWE.
So he's done a few podcasts, but he's able to come on the High Spot Podcast, so we definitely thank him. I got a question.
Sure.
If you had a one-year career in WWE, but that was all you were going to get, and then you were going to be released like James was, would you have taken it, or would you have not rather made it?
Yeah, I would have taken it.
Yeah.
Because how many people can say, not a lot of people can say they've worked for WWE. Yeah. despite the fact of, you know, how your experience will be like, and I'm sure James's experience there, and from all he talks about, from, you know, everybody he came in contact with, was nothing but positive. You know, for some people, it might not be that way. It depends on how you make that opportunity yourself. If you knew you had a year left in WWE and that's all you're going to get, you have to make the most of the opportunity. And, you know, James shows the type of positivity that, you know, no matter what you give me, I'm going to do the best at it I possibly can. So that's something inspiring and something to look forward to in the future.
So definitely follow James Ellsworth on Twitter at Real Ellsworth. And thank you so much, James Ellsworth, for joining the High Spot Podcast. All right, Brian, but now we move on to the Elimination Chamber preview and predictions. And, of course, I know I stole your wings from all the way back in last summer, but let's try to do the best we can here. Five matches. There's probably going to be a half-hour pre-show maybe, or an hour. I don't know, maybe who, Sam or Pete Rosenberg will be on the pre-show panel. And
yeah.
But here we go, Bri. Tag team title match. Sheamus and Cesaro, The Bar, against Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil. I honestly don't see the point of why they had Titus and Apollo. Well, Apollo, by the way, now it's
yeah, I was about
name,
to say.
Minus the Crews. Why they have Apollo defeat them? Maybe to maybe think that there's a possibility, yeah. But I don't see a possibility here. One second. I see that Sheamus and Cesaro have worked too hard, especially to lose to Titus and Apollo. I don't get why they do it on Raw, why they have, you know, why they beat the champion. I don't think it's a right thing to do. I don't think it helps teasing that there's a possibility for this pay-per-view that a title change could happen. So barring something crazy going, I think that The Bar walks out still tag team champions.
Well, that's where I kind of disagree with you, Jeff, because there is a reason why. There's a reason why you want to make this somewhat believable that Apollo and Titus O'Neil have a chance. As much as we didn't like the fact that they got victories over Cesaro and Sheamus in individual scenarios and in tag team, it's just to give you that believability that it might happen. I mean, if it wasn't the case, then why are we watching it? Why are we even paying money to see it? Although we kind of know what the end result's going to be. Perception-wise, you like to think they have a chance to do it.
Don't you like it, though, the other way around, where like Apollo and Titus beat up on tag teams and they earn their way so that it's fresh, that you don't see them interact? Because then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, so when they put them together, when it means something, then they can't win.
Yeah, but when I look at it, though, how many tag teams are really in the Raw roster? I can only name a handful right now, and a lot of them, if you look at the Good Brothers, they're really kind of doing a thing with Finn Balor. They're not in the tag team title picture. When you look at the Revival, after Revival, you know, they're still working their way up, because I think as a company standpoint, I would only imagine from the company standpoint, they're a little wary of putting them in that position, because you want to make sure they can stay healthy as a team. And then you have Sheamus and Cesaro. Then you have Apollo and Titus O'Neil, Titus Worldwide. That's it in your tag team division, because Dean Ambrose is no longer with us due to injury. So him and Seth Rollins are no longer a tag team. That's kind of split its way up. So it's a pretty weak tag team division on Raw right now, and this is the best you can do right now for the tag team titles until, you know, the Good Brothers work their way in there or something happens with the Revival. So, yeah, I obviously see Sheamus and Cesaro winning this one. But, again, I understand the process of why they did what they did.
So we both got The Bar coming out on top there. Matt Hardy versus Bray Wyatt. Yes or no? Yep. Their feud continues. I don't know, man. I really don't know what to say here. I'm just going to throw darts.
Can I start? Let me start with this.
Go ahead.
You said it perfectly. I don't know. I don't know in this one, too, because when you think something makes sense of what they're trying to do, for how many months do we have to hear about when Matt Hardy returned, when the broken gimmick was going to come back? It's here. It had a nice little buzz behind it, but I don't think it has the momentum that maybe WWE or Matt Hardy was hoping for. It kind of seems out of place. And with the whole Bray Wyatt situation, you think, all right, well, you know, Bray Wyatt, this is going to be another one he's going to lose. But no, it seems like he's coming one up on the woken or broken Matt Hardy gimmick. So in this one, as much as it would make sense, in my opinion, to have Matt Hardy win this one, so they're one-on-one even going on in individual contests, I see Bray Wyatt coming out victorious here, where they're kind of mocking the characters, I think, in a way, of Matt Hardy's creation, what he did in TNA. So I see Bray Wyatt coming victorious in this one.
I'm going to say Matt Hardy, because I'm just throwing a dart at it, because I really don't know. I would think that Matt Hardy should get a win back and maybe set up a matchup for Mania, because I don't see really a direction for any of these guys.
But even they set up a match for Mania, this has not picked up the same momentum that people thought the whole Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt. What's the missing link here? Because every single rivalry now I've seen Bray Wyatt in, in my opinion, and I love Bray Wyatt. I really like him a lot. He's such a nice guy. We met him in New Orleans the first time. Such a nice guy.
Well, I don't know if you read the recent reports on Bray.
Okay, well, you know, those are reports. I only go from my experience with Bray Wyatt.
No, like, yes, great guy. Yeah,
great guy, yeah. And I like his work a lot. But there reaches a certain point that when you keep spewing out the same thing of I am the eater of worlds and I am this mythical gothic creature and I have all this darkness around me, and when it comes to the big moments – back to New Orleans and losing to John Cena, it kills your momentum, so it doesn't become believable anymore. And so what? I'm going to believe you because you defeat Matt Hardy? It makes no sense to me. And all the rivalries he's been in, that was supposed to be the support of the storyline between these two, and it hasn't worked. It didn't work for Finn Balor. It didn't work for this. I don't know what's going on. I think something right now is seriously wrong. They have to kind of reevaluate how they're presenting Bray Wyatt. Because in my opinion, although you do have, you know, them lighting up the cell phones when he does come out, he has a great entrance. The product and the bell rings, you don't get it from bell to bell. Exactly.
Crazy, man. I mean, like I said, I'm just throwing darts and I'm just picking Matt Hardy here. So finally have a difference of opinion on that one. But now we go to a women's match between Asuka and Nia Jax. Obviously, Kurt Angle has laid down what the rules are going to be. It's self-explanatory, but I guess we got to explain to the fans here that if Nia Jax is able to beat Asuka, she gets involved in a triple threat match. So I'm kind of guessing that Asuka's going to fight somebody from Raw, but everyone believes that she's going to fight Charlotte.
Well, that's what they originally said.
I still don't know what's
going to
happen.
Then they backtracked from that, saying, oh, it's going to be a champion of her choice, when they initially said the Raw Women's Championship. So, okay. We talked about this earlier on the show. I just don't see Nia Jax, as much as she's built herself up now to be kind of like the Braun Strowman sense of Monday Night Raw. I don't see her defeating Asuka right now, because that undefeated streak is just way important. Asuka has so much momentum, especially why would you want to kill that momentum going into the main event or one of the main events of WrestleMania?
Yeah, I go with Asuka too.
Asuka.
Are you a little bit bothered by her promo on Monday Night Raw? Seems like she struggled with it. Seems like the WWE... Now I sound like Kurt Angle. You're going to keep this. Seems like the WWE is kind of not protecting Asuka as far as the language barrier. Do you have any thoughts on that promo? Because it was kind of tough to watch. She got through it, but it was kind of tough to watch.
The thing that I always kind of get annoyed by is that when it feels like,
I cringe, because when I see her struggle, I'm like, oh crap, they're watching the back, like, well, we can't push her to be, you know what I mean? Like, I cringe when they don't see that they should protect her a little bit more than that when it comes to promos.
Well, yeah, to me, what makes Asuka so intriguing, what makes, for example, Kairi Shinsuke Nakamura intriguing, is that less is more. We know there's a language barrier. We are all aware that they're Japanese. English is not their first language. But when you have them go out there and try to talk, and let's talk specifically about Asuka, and she tries to deliver a promo like that, which I don't think is authentic. It's not really what she wants to say. It's basically a script, I feel, that she's kind of repeating, but it always depends on the delivery. And there's a difference, obviously, in the language barrier. Yeah, you cringe. But at the same time, she's built so much good rapport and so much momentum that although that might be a downfall in terms of like a bump in the road for her, I think from a management standpoint, I'm not quite sure. It could be, like we just said, they're kind of like, ooh, she can't really pull that off or hit her home run with that one.
But the audience
is still 100% behind her, thinks she's a legitimate badass. And with that scenario, the best you could do with Asuka right now, at this point right now, or maybe for the rest of her career in WWE, less is more. She doesn't need to go out there talk.
She
delivers the points, the bullet points, and get over.
All she had to say was, Nia Jax is not ready for Asuka. And that's it.
That's it. That's
and
all she had to say. She
should have just done that. But we'll find out. But you're right. I just was cringing a little bit, because you know how McMahon would probably be like, God damn, pal, why'd you feed her all those lines? I just hope that it doesn't really hurt her in the long run. I just think, like you said, you're point on point, less is more. So we both got Asuka over Nia Jax.
Yes.
I do believe, though, at this match, though, we will find out who will take on who I believe is going to win the Women's Elimination Chamber, and that's Alexa Bliss. I think Alexa Bliss is going to walk out the champion. I think it's going to be a memorable night. I just don't know. I believe in Alexa Bliss. I believe in Sasha and Bayley. I just don't know about, shame on me, Mickie James. I just don't know how Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville are going to, you know, fare in this matchup. I think they may be the first two gone. So I don't know if it's going to be memorable.
I see them being one of the final ones in there.
Okay.
To kind of give them that push that they want to push.
That's a good point. I just don't see anybody beating Alexa Bliss. I think Alexa Bliss, we will find out who challenges her It'd be interesting to see if they choose Asuka to take on Alexa Bliss. That way they have a triple threat match between Nia Jax, Asuka, and Alexa Bliss, where they kind of be like, well, Alexa and Nia are friends, and they can gang up on Asuka. But then again, who does Charlotte Flair take on? We don't know yet. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But here, though, I do believe Alexa Bliss walks out the champion, and we find out who challenges her that same night.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think we find out that night, especially who Asuka chooses and decides after she defeats Nia Jax, in my opinion. I think Alexa Bliss is out there. Part of me kind of leans towards Sasha, but I really think they're building up a whole Sasha-Bailey rivalry, which will most likely maybe happen or culminate at WrestleMania.
So here's my question. You just said that, right? How many women's matches are you going to have at WrestleMania?
You could have quite a few here. I mean, in terms of the SmackDown side, I don't know why, because storyline-wise, all it's about is, you know, the Riot Squad and Charlotte and Naomi, and you could see a tag team match most likely. Obviously, Charlotte has to individually defend her title, but with the whole scenario, I could see maybe four women's matches
at WrestleMania.
I could possibly see that.
How long is the card?
Well, how long was last year's? It was a 7-hour show. You know, they don't necessarily have to be on the WrestleMania card. They could be in the pre-show. They, you know, it could be at some point. But again, you need those buffers. I'm not trying to insult the women's division and say that they're buffers. But with those types of matches, you know, I'm kind of intrigued. You know why? Because this whole Sasha Banks-Bailey thing, it's, you know, we saw what they did in Brooklyn. I don't think you can repeat that type of performance, but that storyline makes sense. That storyline you can dive into, and it's not always about the title. So I think that stands on its own. And in terms of Alexa Bliss, you know, I could see an Alexa Bliss-Asuka match at WrestleMania, which would be cool. You throw in the Nia Jax factor. That's a pretty interesting factor there, too. But I don't think they would sacrifice her winning streak for that. So I think you'd see Asuka and Alexa Bliss. To me, it sells itself.
If they do Asuka and Alexa Bliss, then I will guarantee you that they do like Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, where Asuka beats Alexa Bliss in less than 10 seconds, because I think that's the way to go there. But
we're not WrestleMania yet, Jeff, but we'll get there.
I'm already booking already. I'm like Ellsworth. I'm already got. You know, you're telling me all these options, and I'm like trying to book it on the fly here. But that could be interesting too, right? But Alexa Bliss, we both have coming out the victor. Do you believe you'll find out who challenges her that night?
Yes, we will find out.
Oh man, the road to WrestleMania, we're getting there, man. Fastlane, we just got to get through Fastlane, and then we're in New Orleans, man. All right, so Ronda Rousey contract signing, Bri. It will be in Las Vegas. She will sign with Monday Night Raw, a full-time contract. All I'm asking you to predict is, what's going to happen here? Will we see Stephanie McMahon? Will we see the build-up here for WrestleMania and what Ronda Rousey will do?
Yes, I think we will see Stephanie McMahon. And we'll see her kind of question Ronda Rousey as to what she did, kind of taking the spotlight away from the Women's Royal Rumble, in a sense, in terms of character-based. And, yeah, I don't see Ronda Rousey competing against, although the dream match that people want to see is her and Charlotte. I don't see that happening.
SummerSlam,
maybe, down the road, because she is a full-timer now, so we can slowly build that up for her. In terms of her first WrestleMania appearance, which she's going to do, I think you made a great point last week or the week before in terms of having her tag match would probably be best and kind of hide a lot of the issues she might have in terms of being in the ring, of not being one-on-one just yet until she gets more polishing behind her. So, yeah, I see that happening for Ronda. She's going to sign for Raw. Stevie's going to come out. We all know with contract signings, there's some type of melee here. And you brought up a great point, too, where there's still some pent-up frustration, because there is history between Ronda and Stephanie from WrestleMania 31 in Santa Clara and in Levi Stadium and what happened there. And we like to think, oh, is The Rock going to come back? But no, they have built up some tension between Kurt Angle and Triple H. So a tag team match between those two against Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle, that could be a possibility. And that's something I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. I don't think that Ronda Rousey will have an individual match at WrestleMania.
I agree. Do you think there's a sacrificial lamb heads out to the ring at Elimination Chamber and kind of test Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, that'll be Alicia Fox, basically. She'll be the sacrificial lamb. I'm not saying this to be funny.
I think she may be hurt. Maybe Dana Brooke?
Dana Brooke, maybe. You don't know. There will be some sacrificial lamb there to challenge her.
Numbers. It could be Dana.
That she doesn't belong, and then she proves kind of, you know, where her skill set is from what she's been training at the Performance Center. But I don't think it's going to lead to a match one-on-one with somebody. It's going to lead, I think, to a tag team match. That's what makes sense in terms of protecting Ronda.
I will make this prediction. You say protecting. I think that by WrestleMania, she will, I guess, surprise us. I think she'll be better than we all think.
Anything she does, any type of thing she do,
will surprise us.
Then we end up saying the word protect. That word will be used so much heading into WrestleMania that I believe afterwards we'll be like, whoa, we're kind of a little bit surprised that she's better than we thought. Because I think Ronda Rousey is a professional, would not do this to be embarrassed. And I think that she's letting on, she's trained more than she's letting on with this. So I think she's, whenever she is there, she's working her butt off. And I think that we will be surprised, pleasantly surprised, after WrestleMania, whenever she, you know, whenever we see her in action. But that's going to be interesting, too. There is the contract signing. And then Elimination Chamber, the men's match. We got Roman Reigns versus John Cena, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, Elias, Braun Strowman, The Miz. The Miz will come in number one. We know that. Seven men. So we're kind of think it's going to open up as a triple threat match. But at the end of the day, it just seems like we know the outcome already. It's hard to bet against Roman Reigns because for the longest time, the rumors have started that it's going to be Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. This is the best way to go into that match. This is the best way to start this planting the seeds and getting on the road between Brock and Roman Reigns. I don't see anybody else coming out on top. I would love to see Braun Strowman because I think he deserves to go to WrestleMania and take on Brock Lesnar. And then at the end of the night where Brock Lesnar raises his hand and beats Brock Lesnar, I think that's what we need to see. But I don't think we're going to get that. I think we're going to get Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. And then you know what's going to happen at WrestleMania, the coronation of Roman Reigns for the, you know, is it the second time, third time? So, yeah, that's the way I see it. I see Roman Reigns coming out on top here at the Elimination Chamber. So your thoughts, Trendsetter?
Yeah, I see exactly the same way that it's all destined for Roman Reigns. It's been that way since the end of last year's WrestleMania. We knew this was the road they were going to go on. Like I mentioned before, early on the show, there were some speed bumps along the way, wondering, are they going to change plans here? Now, the whole situation with the rumors of the drug test that has gone on with Roman Reigns, and that can kind of boot him out of the main event of WrestleMania, right, or one of the main events, still has yet to we still have yet to find out any more news about that. But the way things are going right now, you'd be a fool to bet against the fact that Roman Reigns is going to go one-on-one with Brock Lesnar. It's going to be a rematch, basically, of what we saw at WrestleMania 31, but the outcome a little bit differently, because although that was supposed to be Roman Reigns' shiny moment, and things were maybe changed last minute for Seth Rollins, which I thought was a very good move, because, you know, as much as people think I hate on Roman Reigns, I don't think he was ready at that moment, in my opinion, to have that type of scenario. Now that, you know, he's been a champion already twice, defeated Triple H at a main event in WrestleMania, and has now kind of gone on the favor of the fans, because due to the whole, reunion of the Shield, that's kind of helped him in a way now where he has this persona. I think he carries himself a little bit differently too in his promos. Yeah, he has this type of arrogant attitude, which I think isn't necessarily made up. It's a lot of him having a chip on his shoulder. Believe it or not, Roman Reigns has a chip on his shoulder despite all he's accomplished right now at a very young age in this business.
I think the chip is the crowd reaction. I think that's what the chip is.
It's sticking it to everybody else and saying, yeah, you think you know more than I do. So I think it's in that direction. I don't think there's going to be a curveball here thrown at all. And to me, my main thing is not necessarily worrying about the main event, is worrying about what do you do with Braun Strowman? What do you do with Seth Rollins? What do you do with Finn Balor? What do you do with The Miz? What do you do with these individuals that you know are not going to be part of the main event of WrestleMania, or one of the main events of WrestleMania for the Universal title? So that's what I'm more interested in, believe it or not, than the outcome. We know it's going to be Roman Reigns, and it'll be Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania.
So there you go. I mean, the only one we disagree on is Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, so we'll find out who becomes the winner.
That's like tossing two names up in the air and just figuring out who lands up.
Heads or tails on who's going to win that one. So there you go, your preview predictions. Next week, we will recap it for you, Elimination Chamber, as we head closer and closer. Like we said last year, me and Brian right now, we're renting the car. We're like taking a look at it. Which one exactly is going to take us on the road to WrestleMania this year? We're making a decision between white and red.
You check the glove compartment, though.
Exactly.
We don't want to have a scenario
like
Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want that.
You don't want that. So definitely we're on the road to WrestleMania. Next time you will see us, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, will be at Standalone Wrestling as they present Liftoff this Saturday night at Atlantic Cape May Community College, Building E. The doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time is at 7. For tickets, yes, tickets are still remaining, so go to standalonewrestling.com or call 973-902-2345. Tickets are going fast. It'll be headlined by Tennille Dashwood taking on Brittany Blake. You'll also see stars there like LAX, the Impact Tag Team Champions, as well as Martin Stone, who is Danny Burch on NXT. He will be there. And, of course, the next time you hear from us will be next week. We will have your Elimination Chamber liftoff recap, plus so much more. Find us on blogtalkradio.com/highspotpodcast, available on the Cheap Pops Podcast Network. Trendsetter, where else can they find the Jersey Wrecking Crew and the High Spot Podcast?
Well, you can also find us on our networks. There's our B-Plus Player Radio and the Shining Wizards Radio Network, too, Jeff.
And definitely check out the Cheap Pops Podcast Network, Brian Fritz and Michael Wiseman's Baby. They are the flagship show there with Between the Ropes every Wednesday. Also catch the Cosmetic Geppetto, Sport Guys Talking Wrestling, Stick to the Gimmick, and also Shining Wizards and B-Plus Radio Networks. Their amazing podcasts like Destruction 101, A Drink with Gino, A Genuine Taste of Wrestling, and Outsider's Edge with Mark Adam Haggerty. We want to thank them so much for supporting the High Spot Podcast. We will be with you guys next week. And where can they catch us, Trendsetter?
Well, Jeff, you can catch us on all our social media platforms out there. You guys can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/HighSpotPodcast. You guys can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat, all one word, @HighSpotPodcast, as well as our brand spanking new website, HighSpotPodcast.com.
All right, thanks goes out to James Ellsworth, former WWE star, for joining us on this week's show. Remember, next week we've got your Elimination Chamber recap. And, guys, we do this for you. We do it for none other than the crew.
I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight.
They're getting closer. What do we do?
Well, I'm going to have a go at Betway's 4-to-score game for a chance to win 25 grand.
What?
Relax. It's free to play every week. You simply predict the first teams to score in the top four English leagues.
The time has come.
You're right. We'd be howling mad to miss this one.
I could win 25 grand.
For the love of the game. Betway. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.